episode of the Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. This is episode number 78. My name is DJ Chuang, your host. Welcome again to another episode, and welcome to those of you who are first-time listeners. This episode is a special milestone for Social Media Church, not because we've reached number 78, but because we are launching a new partnership. With this episode, our new partner is Leadership Network, based in Dallas, Texas, but connecting with churches around the country in the United States and parts of the world. Very grateful for this connection that I've had personally as a full-time staff with Leadership Network from 2006 to 2010, and then continuing on as a member of the alumni staff. I continue to do occasional contracted work. And we're going to be simulcasting, if you can do that, on a podcast. Essentially, it's a cross-post over on the Leadership Network blog. And we'll continue doing what we're here doing at socialmediachurch.net. So those of you that are new, welcome, and you can connect with us at socialmediachurch.net. We're certainly on all the various social media networks that popular people are on, Facebook, Twitter. We've got a voicemail line, an email, and I'll share that information with you later. But what all that you need to know at this point is socialmediachurch.net, and that'll get you connected for everything. And you can subscribe on iTunes as well as Stitcher and RSS. On this episode, I really want to get right into our conversation. And this is a very special, probably the most important topic that I've ever covered to date with someone about social media and the church, because we're talking about the church and its purpose in the world, but not just about social media, but really at the core of what the church is all about. And so the person I talked with is Peter McGowan. He launched a creative agency, I think is the proper category for it, called Plain Joe Studios, over on the other side of the Saddleback Mountains here in Southern California. And Plain Joe Studios is no stranger to the church. They've worked with over 350 churches in various ways, as well as for-profit companies, very in touch with culture, with a very strong heartbeat for kingdom impact of the church in the world. And I sat down with him, and we talked about all kinds of topics in a meandering kind of way, kind of a circular fashion around the mountain, getting a 360-degree perspective on what the church is really all about. We start with breaking some categories of for-profit versus non-profit, employee versus contractor versus volunteer versus staff, and challenge and reconsider what stewardship is really all about. That it's maximizing resources and relationships to maximize kingdom impact. We look at some real-life examples from pop culture. We talk about divergent thinking and the confluence of great ideas, the use of outside agencies, the role of storytelling, especially the church with the greatest story of human history, and of course, we do talk about social media engagement. So I'm just going to switch tracks, let the conversation speak for itself, and then I'll see you on the other side in about 30 minutes. This is my conversation with Peter McGowan.
You know, for me, it doesn't matter if you're an independent contractor working, if you're employed by somebody, we're all servants to the same king. Mm-hmm. We all have the same master. Yes. But all these man-made labels of I'm an employee, I'm a contractor, I'm a vendor, all these things, whatever, it really is about maximizing relationships and resources in order to have maximum kingdom impact. If that makes sense. So
yeah, but to step outside of that and get perspective on what those things are, very few people do.
Yeah, we definitely.
And so until that's called out, everybody stays in the boxes. Yeah, and they don't know that. You can like step out of the box.
Yeah, it's like what we talked about before. It's that whole assembly line.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, just side note: have you seen that new Lego movie?
Not yet. My son has.
You gotta see it. Okay, it really is. My favorite thing is beyond the sophomore's humor and all the little movie anecdotes and innuendos and stuff. It was really funny.
Oh, cool.
It actually has a pretty profound, deep backstory.
So the storyline's good.
Yeah, it is. And basically, without totally spoiling it, it is the premise that there are instructions, and you're supposed to follow the instructions.
Oh.
Do not deviate from the assembly line. And in fact, the villain story, he wants to fix everything permanently, so nothing ever changes off the instructions. And the whole thing is about Legos, which makes it brilliant, is you build off the instructions, and you actually learn these techniques and these building mechanisms and the way that pieces come together, and it frees you up to be creative, to build even better things and things on your own. Uh-huh. So like my son, he builds killer spaceships now because he's built dozens of Lego spaceships following the instructions, but then he breaks them and builds his own things. But anyways, there's a whole other funnier thing. But the whole thing is, in the Lego movie is, you have these instructions. You even have these different worlds. It's like zoning. You have the Western world. That's all, everything Western. You have the city world, everything city. Then you have the creative cloud fun, whatever. There are no rules, whatever. But there's no space for actual true divergent creative thinking within the instruction world. Mm-hmm. And that's our thing is, in the very first verse in the Bible, God created. Our God is the God of creativity.
Yes.
He actually wants us to use divergent thinking. That's what separates us. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we're supposed to use that divergent thinking to innovate, to come up with new things. And as we have those points of discovery, we share the stories. And sharing stories is core to the human condition. I mean, it's how we share with our spouses, with our kids, with our friends. When we look at businesses, the ones that we resonate with are the ones that we have those stories with. I won this race.
Not just hitting a person with 1,000 ads, images, but it's actually the storyline that carries it.
It's the thing is, you can beat people into submission. I mean, it's kind of like, you can lay down the walkways. I don't know if you ever heard about that. There's an urban legend, I think it actually is true, about a university that, rather than paving all the walkways, they planted grass.
Yeah.
And they let the students walk where they wanted.
Yeah.
And where the pathways were created.
Yes.
They poured
the
concrete.
That's a common folklore, probably true, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the reality is, original roads were actually done on cart paths, on which were based on, cow pastures, the paths that cows went through, to, the path of least resistance and finding the way through and stuff like that. And I think with modernism, we get sucked into this whole thing of, form follows function. If you need to get from here to there, it's a straight line. And this is actually more of an Asian thing. Have you ever heard of the, in Stratops, Doug Slaybaugh's
I went through the training.
Know the whole thing of circling the mountain, which is a very Eastern
perspective
thing. Yeah, it gives you different perspective. Yeah, it's very different than hooking up a line and climbing straight up to the top.
Yes.
But it's a very Western mindset to say, hey, we're going to go straight up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And they miss the journey.
Yes.
And they miss the perspectives.
Right.
And that very much is when we look at creative thinking and how we actually help churches. It's getting them off the pathway that, okay, you're on a hamster wheel that you think every week the church needs to be reinvented because you get bored with it because you show up every week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know what? Trust me. I've talked to guys at Disney who work there. Every week showing up, they get bored out of their mind when they hear a certain song. But there's something refreshing about it when you see the impact on daily visitors that are seeing it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But then we come back over to these annual pass holders who come once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them once a week. I mean, they have some people that come every day. It's not a huge percentage of people that can afford that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But Disney's just done such a magnificent job telling a story. Telling a story in an immersive environment.
Yes.
And that's our biggest struggle with the Church and the Bride of Christ is we've become unintentional about telling our story. And what does that mean, not only through social media and web platforms, but through environments?
Environment, architecture.
Yeah, architecture, what we call wayfinding signage.
Design.
Yeah, it's all interrelated. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like...
So everything speaks.
Yeah, yeah. Everything does. And I'll just use a quick example, and definitely if I have any friends that hear this part, they might think I'm taking a shot at them. But this has happened more than once.
Okay.
I mean, we've come up to a church, and in our conversations with them, they say they're a very welcoming church. It's very open door. Anyone's welcome. Come as you are.
Mm-hmm.
No perfect people, however it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going up to the church for the very first time, and on the doors says, "Do not enter."
Ah, ouch.
Yeah. Well, you know, it wasn't their fault, though, because what they were thinking was, and it was probably a facilities guy, he was thinking functionally, these are going to be the entrance doors, these are the exit doors for circulation.
Yes.
You know, but there's so many other ways that you could say that, even if it's exit only. But even if you say, even probably better is, you know, welcome, entrance to the left or something like that.
Yes, yes, that would be better.
Or, you know, we have one church that let us, like, on those exit doors, there were no handles.
Yeah.
You know, it just, people figure out, there's no handles, you can't open it up. That's it just looks like windows.
Uh-huh.
There's so many better ways than saying, do not enter.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those subtle things. And people, like, say, oh, no, that's common sense. People would know that we don't mean that. And it's like, really? No. Do you think so? Because, I mean, I've stood there and people ask you where the restroom is and you're standing right in front of it,
yes,
right in front of the restroom sign.
That's right.
People, like, just kind of go on autopilot. And there's all these subliminal messages that, you know, pull things over. So,
and churches are a very threatening place for someone who's never stepped into the doors of one.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so people are very sensitive to all those kinds of things.
The language, the Christianese, the words that we're using. I mean, because I know that talking to some non-Christians before, they go, man, it's just like, go in and it says, you know, the mission or the ministry, and just those words scare them. They don't know what it means. They're like, am I going to be like, you know, converted or like held underwater or something like that? And when they talk about full immersion baptism, it doesn't mean
it's probably good.
We've created these country clubs that, you know, you're unable to see the forest from the trees. And, you know, most of the largest companies in the world use outside agencies, like Apple uses an outside ad agency to help them develop their campaigns and stuff, to help them think through industrial design, to help them think through, you know, innovation, because it's the whole thinking off the assembly line, divergent thinking, seeing the forest from the trees.
So there's a value in the rest of the world for having an outsider come in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but the church is stuck in this old modernist mindset that we use the example of you know, buildings a lot.
Yes.
So it's kind of like, you know, and I used to work at IBM, and, you know, this came even with software. It was the whole idea of a monolithic approach where everything, it's a high rise. You're building a skyscraper.
Yes.
You can get to every level through the elevator. It's so efficient. It's great. You know, everything is just stacked on top of each other. You never have to go out into the streets and get messy. And that's cool, but skyscrapers are really expensive to build. And they're impossible to change. I mean, you know, unless you're going to demo the whole thing and tear it down. But the way that the web has emerged, the way that new current technology, the way that even culture has emerged, we've gone away from building these skyscrapers. You know, some people are still building skyscrapers, like in the Middle East and Asia, but they're more or less trophies to how well they're doing.
They still want to be the tallest building in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're
But actually, how people gather. It's going back to how it was historically, this neighborhood approach where you have, you know, everything is walkable and it's all these different buildings, but they all interconnect. That's why people love New York City. I mean, you know, the ability to walk around and just connect around Times Square and stuff, or Manhattan or even Brooklyn or Queens.
The porousness, the mobility.
Yeah.
Autonomy.
And you have all these different eclectic things coming together, forming these neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way software development has gone, is now you have all these cloud-based apps, everything plugs in. So now it's like you have your website, but it's getting its videos from YouTube or Vimeo. You know, the social network feeds or the photo feeds are now coming from, Instagram.
APIs, widgets, data's flowing back and forth.
As long as everyone is talking, as long as the streets connect, as long as everyone knows to stay on the right side of the road, it's all interworking and stuff. But in business, you know, it went from, you hire everyone in-house and doing all the stuff to now they're outsourcing. One of the fastest growing segments within some of the business I'm involved with, one of them is outsource IT, MSPs, managed service providers.
Yes.
It doesn't mean all of your IT is outsourced, but the core of it, the help desk part of it, it's kind of like, why would you have in-house help desk when you should really, if you have a really good IT, you should only need it like maybe once a week or once a month when things break.
Yes.
But it's like having a full-time mechanic to manage company cars.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, if your cars are running really well, you know, they only need servicing once in a while. Now, you still need an IT director or someone like that to architect things, make sure everything's coming together.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when we start looking at, you know, how churches work, they're very much on this mindset of, we have to have everyone in-house. They all have to be employees. Because that's what they read in a business book or something like that. Because then you have ultimate control of their schedule. You don't have to plan now. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, with Imagineering. Yes. Of the 3,500 Imagineers right now, I think like 1,500 are actually employees. 2,000 are actually subcontractors that, you know, they hire and fire or let go. I'm not saying that's a good thing, actually. But, you know, Pixar is the opposite. Pixar has a really strong employee base. But they reach to the outside when they need to swell up a little bit and handle special projects or something.
To increase capacity.
Yeah, to increase capacity.
To work on something.
Sure. Yeah. But the key thing is the confluence of great ideas and how you pull those ideas in from outsiders. Yeah. But that's a big struggle that we're dealing with in the church. Is a lot of time we call it intellectual incest. It's like, you know, it's a circle, a closed room, and they might, hopefully, they're talking with other churches at least. But even that pool...
But I'm in that church leadership world, and churches do not talk to each other. Yeah. There's not a safe place to do that.
Yeah.
And everybody's too busy in their own churches because it's not the planning. Mm-hmm. And so they're inefficient. There's an incestual thing going. And then when it comes to technology, it's moving too fast.
Yeah.
They can't get their heads around it. So.
Yeah. No, it's a huge mess. I mean, it really is, because, you know, churches are all hung up. I mean, we're so busy on the weekly thing, we couldn't even possibly think of scheduling something out. Like, you know, like my friend at Pixar that was telling you, or Disney Animation.
Working on 5-year projects.
Yeah. Her film is going to be coming out in 2019. And, like, yeah, for the church to be working on something that's 5 years out, it's like they have to when they're working on a building project because there's no way around it. But if they had a choice to build a building in a couple months, they would. Like, I've talked to pastors before that are like, man, Extreme Home Makeover, they can build a house in a week. Can we do that? And it's like, dude, you don't know the condition of those homes afterwards. Anyways, I digress.
Tell us about how Media Social came about.
Actually, yeah, it was a very interesting conversation. So we had actually been a part of a couple churches doing different things involved with the open
source. Just
providing
a website, right?
Yeah, well, Plain Joe's whole thing was, you know, we help churches tell their story. So whether it's through design that walks away with people or traditional print communication, design that doesn't walk away with people, we call environmental design, or design people interact with. So that comes into web media, mobile app development,
stuff
like
that. That's a neat way to sort
it
out.
Oh, thanks. So that's, for us, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, we're storytellers. We really want practical ways of, okay, how do we actually help people tell their story?
Mm-hmm.
So our very first delve into the online church world was helping churches that were using, you know, the Life Church platform and wanting to adapt and use that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there were a few other platforms out there that we helped them kind of integrate.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much across the board, they all got pretty frustrated relatively quickly, especially after things launched and they needed ongoing support and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right about that time, we had some interesting conversations going with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
Vice President of Creative over at CBS here in LA, Matt Hernandez is a great guy. And he's a Christian, and we actually had some friends in ABC in San Diego and stuff. And just in the conversations, we were talking about the progression of television and social engagement and use of social media and things like that. And
are you referring to the second screen?
Second screen or anything, actually.
Okay.
Anything related to that, creating content that's, like, shareable.
Okay.
So, you know, like the Conan O'Brien show, they film it, but then they create these little Team Coco, does these things that are, that are shareable and stuff like that. But then doing what Facebook and Google did as far as how do you actually know who they are. So for these television producers, for them to sell advertising, to be able to say, hey, man, if we could actually know if that was a man or a woman or someone with a junior hire, and we knew that we could sell them an ad specific to him like Google and Facebook do, how much more powerful would that be? So there actually ended up being this whole idea of a social television engine that was built around Facebook with the sole intention of selling directed ads.
Okay.
So that's how actually Media Social got off the ground, that premise behind it.
Uh-huh.
And then through the startup of a couple events, as soon as we started beta testing Media Social, some churches like latched onto it right away.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than selling ads, it was like, it was kind of, you know, Google's original approach, and even Facebook is like, how do we engage with them if we know who they are?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was really the idea behind Media Social, was how do we reach beyond the numbers of just saying, hey, we had, you know, 5,000 viewers, 10% logged in with Facebook. There's these lists of 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get the names, emails, locations, the number of interactions that they've had, and actually connect with them.
Yes.
And welcome them. And
as a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah. So that's what I talk about a lot of times. It's bringing the digital into an analog world, into a physical relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So what it becomes is it just becomes this ultra huge wide net. So rather than just sitting there randomly saying, hey, we have 100,000 Facebook fans. That's great. But who are they? And if you follow the trends that say, you know, 4% of your social media, 100% of it is generated by 4% of your base.
Yes,
yeah,
the content.
The content. Yeah, yeah. Those are the people who are actually sharing stuff. Our whole thing is figure out who those 4% are. If you can make them just that 4%, you know, half as effective, it could double your base. 200% growth. If they're the ones who are generating 100% of your content, you know, rather than trying to sit there and shotgun out aimlessly. Mm-hmm. So media social, actually, we equip people with zeroing in on that smaller percentage of people who are already sharing their status, people who are actually reaching out to be connected with. And for the church, the big thing has been it's actually allowed them to not only engage with people on a personal level for life change and invite them physically to church or something like that, or get them plugged into the church. Mm-hmm. It allows them to actually build their volunteer pool. Mm. So Mill Smith,
yes.
You know, his first year, he had like...
Community Bible Church in San Antonio.
Yep, CBC in San Antonio. I mean, I like to share the story. It might be a little exaggerated, but I remember
one day
he called me. and he's all, Pete, you wouldn't believe this. He just had, relatively speaking, he had lack of support within the church. He had leadership support, but within the departments, they were so focused on the main thing being the Sunday worship experience. He literally had to go to the bookstore and get a DVD to rip it, put it onto his computer to upload to the online campus. Because the IT and the media department were so busy, they were doing that. You know, and here we are, like last year, Nils had over 1 million viewers, like, you know, I've got 40,000 Facebook people logged in. They have 420,000 Facebook fans now.
Yes, they do.
But that first year, it was just him. And I think he raised up 70 or 80 volunteers, like primarily based on the social media lookup within Media Social. He was able to say, okay, who are these people coming 20 times a month?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they make good hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew who they were, it wasn't just a stat that said, hey, you have 40% first-time viewers.
So instead of sending an email to 1,000 people and say, hey, we're looking for volunteers, you actually have data on your dashboard saying, here's people that have checked in 20 times in the past month.
Yep.
And that's a shorter list of 20 people.
Yes.
And
actually,
you have a real conversation with each of those.
Yeah. And it is actually a list of people. It is actually with their names, their Facebook accounts, their email, their location, their age, the first time they visited, how many times they've come, when's the last time they came. Like, pretty.
And you can go look at their wall and get a little more context for who they are and what they're interested in.
Yeah. And that's all that's information that's, you know, below the iceberg. So at face value, Media Social looks just like every other church. Broadcast platform out there, but that is what separates Media Social apart. That it actually equips you with that ability to actually do pastoral work, if that makes sense. So, and we found, I mean, that's the key thing is the guys who are connecting with Media Social are the ones who are, you know, really interested in the active ministry side of things, not just the technological. Okay, we got the widget up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it lights up, must work. They're not really looking at what the, you know, what's happening on the back end.
So what's made Legos such the renaissance. I mean, it's taken on a whole new life in the past 3 to 5 years.
You're right. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with the whole commercialization, franchising. And actually, someone did a post about it the other day about how, you know, just the whole merchandising and the brands.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's brilliant. I think when you look at, I grew up on Legos. I used to buy the books that said, oh, you can build the city or this spaceship or all these different things. Whether it gave us instructions or just images, like that's really what helps stimulate my mind beyond video games. And I think there's some great video games now, like Minecraft and stuff, that still kind of...
Oh, my son is so into Minecraft.
Oh, yeah.
16.
Yeah. Now, I think you can slip away into, you know, just a virtual... I think that's what's great about Legos is they're still tactile.
Yes.
And you can see the real-world physics when you build something, how it falls apart or doesn't hold together and stuff. But for a while there, I think Legos was just kind of progressing, but it was its own separate, isolated brand. And, you know, it was like we had lived in such an assembly line driven culture that, you know, if you're in English, you're over here. If you're a math major, you're over here. If you're a music major, you're over here.
Yes.
It's that whole
siloing.
Yeah, it's that whole siloing. Even when it came to toys, all the brands, even within the same organization.
Yes.
So, you know, Disney was brilliant about that. And some people go like, oh, do you think Walt Disney, you know, he'd be like the commercialization of everything. But, you know, he'd be, you know, rolling over in his grave or something silly like that. But that's actually first thing from the truth. He was a natural brander. I mean, you know, Snow White, really, in the Seven Dwarfs, I mean, that built the Walt Disney Company as we know it. You know, from the purchase of the Disney Animation Studios. And when Disney had a 15-year vision building up to the opening of Disneyland, And 6 months into it, I mean, the design of the castle was Snow White's castle. I mean, just to the right of it at Disneyland, you have the wishing well and everything like that. But the reality is, 6 months into it, on the boards they had Sleeping Beauty. So it became Sleeping Beauty's castle. It was a total marketing, merchandising. He realized, okay, let's switch this around. Let's, you know, play over to that. When you look at rides like Peter Pan, you know, the Peter Pan movie and the Snow White, it was immersing people in the films that they had. And then the whole merchandising of the products and everything like that. And Walt was a way ahead of time because, ironically, it just wasn't really done that well when it comes to other things. I mean, you have some television shows like, you know, Lone Ranger, and they'd come out with a couple little toys, but they really didn't expand that much into it. Then you have, you know, George Lucas, who was heavily influenced by Walt Disney. And the whole merchandising, I mean, that's what he held on to. You know, 20th Century Fox was like, oh yeah, whatever. Yeah, take the merchandising. We're going to distribute it. And the whole toy industry, you know, comic book industry, you know, calendars, all these different things just blew up out of that. So for Legos, I think in the last few years, their ability to cross-brand and actually develop Lego Star Wars, you know, Lego – I mean, really, it's amazing what they've been able to do as far as crossing over both the Marvel and the DC universes.
Yes.
It only crosses over – I mean, the fact that you just have the Lego movie and it brought in Warner Brothers, I think they were able to bring in – you know, Star Wars into a film with DC, into a film with, well, Marvel's now Disney as well. But the fact that they could bring those characters together, and you had a Superman and a Batman along with Han Solo and R2-D2. I mean, it's just like, or was it C-3PO? It's hilarious. And when we look at how we exist as human beings, when we're batched by age group, put through the academic system, and then I've heard people say, well, you know, who you are at work is different than who you are in your personal life, is who you are in these different silos. And the reality is you are who you are, and you need to be able to cross those things over. And
because you're still you.
Yeah, you are. And when I was a kid, I had a G.I. Joe set, and then I also had Legos, and I had Star Wars.
Yes.
And I had sets where all three were playing together. And Legos has actually let that actually legitimately happen now. And I think kids have actually really been able to connect with it. So even when you look at some of the newer video games like, you know, Disney Infinity, or even the Mario, the Nintendo series, where they bring in these party games where all the different characters get to collide on television shows, when you see the crossovers, you know, they used to do it lightly, but now, like, when you have the characters crossing over and everything, even within films, I mean, it's just, it's fun. It's that whole story, the backstory, the inside track, when you like get to know that, oh, that someone does a cameo or something like that, you know how you know special that is.
And we see that on YouTube, you see stars collaborating.
And that's our thing, is, you know, trying to get the church to cross collaborate. Ministries should not be silos. And we're just so used to putting things down assembly lines. And it's like, no, you know what? The parking lot ministry, the home group ministry, and the IT guys, and the missions guys, you know, they all have continuity. And how do they actually connect in a practical way is really a big question that we love to help kind of bring solutions to. You know?
So you've diagnosed the problem pretty well in terms of how the CHAPE has, how the church used to be throughout history. The center of creativity, because we're leading in the go ahead and say it the way you say it.
Yeah, I mean, the church used to lead in culture. It led in storytelling. It led in art and science and technology, all those things. I mean, when you look at, I mean, the father of modern genetics, Gregory Mendel was an Augustan monk. And there was a lot of guys. I mean, when you look at early colleges and the whole formation, it was all based around the church. You know, they celebrated education. They celebrated technology. They embraced it. You know, the very first, the original, I mean, I think the Catholic Church is still one of the largest landholders in the world.
Yes.
But it was the original, like, multinational corporation, you know, establishing missions globally to, you know,
all goes back to Genesis 1, that God was creator and we're created in his image.
Yes.
And therefore, we are creative.
Yeah, we are creative. Yeah, we're born to be creative.
And where did we get lost? How did that change?
Yeah, I really think it goes back to the whole idea of, you know, one of the most, you know, amazing things that's happened in human industry was the Industrial Revolution. And the Industrial Revolution led to the commoditization of life as we know it. So, you know, for example, like before, you know, Jesus was a carpenter. If if he was going to make a table and chair, you know, it'd probably take, I don't know, a couple days. Maybe he's got it. He can make it in a day. Really good. maybe he can make 10 in a day. You know, maybe 100 in a day. However you want to say it. You know, because of the assembly line, IKEA can make 10,000 in a week and make it affordable for everybody. So the assembly line is great. But the way that it has influenced our culture, you know, basically, you know, skipping through a lot of details, mm-hmm. our modern education system was based after the assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, taking kids, bashing them by age group,
mm-hmm.
you know, as if, you know, I think Sir Ken Robinson, he does a talk on paradigms mm-hmm. in education that's awesome. That really, he says, you know, as if the most important thing is their age. You know, you push them through by age group, different grades into junior high, high school, and then you put them into college and university. And that assembly line, if you look at the, if you do really well in school, you end up becoming an educator usually. That's the nature of that assembly line.
And you know, seminaries are exactly designed that way.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually my early upbringing in spiritual formation is, okay, you put kids through Sunday school, and then you put them into junior high groups, high school mm-hmm. groups, onto college, and then they become, you know, into seminary, they become pastors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as if that's what a Christian or Christ follower is all about. And the whole idea of custom handcrafted spiritual formation has totally gotten lost.
Mm.
And we constantly see this happening. Is we work on a project where it seems like, okay, this is going to work. And then someone from an assembly line approach comes and just wrecks the whole train. It's like, no, no, just make a loop. Make it like this. Make it a racetrack. And we're talking like, hey, man, we're designed to be cross-country runners. We're designed to run marathons through cities.
Mm.
The course does not have to be linear, actually.
Mm.
You know, it is more of a capture the flag, if anything. It's like you just kind of figure it out. But make no mistake, there is a finish line.
Mm-hmm.
There is a finish line. And
actually, that's a biblical imagery, marathon.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. There's actually a funny video on that that's saying like that we've, even when it comes to a marathon, it's like we think it's just this one pathway. And it's not, but it's we're running this race in life, and it's this mm-hmm. nonlinear approach
mm-hmm.
that brings things. So I think, you know, the whole idea that spiritual formation is a clerical process. You go in and you run laps. You mm-hmm. go to Sunday school class. You read the Bible more. Mm-hmm. That's how you become more, you know, biblical. But the whole idea of collaborative learning, the whole idea of, okay, how does my spiritual walk at work and at school and at home all intersect? Mm-hmm. Just like Legos, how does that apply uh-huh. from all the different brands and all the different sets? Mm-hmm. How does it come together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have I been taught the basic structure through discipline? But then have I been left free to kind of apply it? And the sad thing is, I mean, I talked to an, actually, I talked to a musician once
mm-hmm.
who, he plays guitar, and it was just the weirdest comment. And he actually is an instructor. I won't say what subject it is, but he actually made the comment, what does math have to do with art? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you're a musician. And then when I said that, he was like, oh, well not music, because obviously music's based. I'm all, well, isn't music art? And I'm like, dude, but even art, I mean, composition, the rule of thirds, yes. The Fibonacci sequence, I mean, all these beautiful things that actually bring art together, I mean, it is very mathematically based,
yes.
You know, anyways. But that's the thing is, a lot of times people go, you know, what does my faith have to do with this
mm-hmm.
thing I'm going through? And mm-hmm. we fail to connect the dots. What does social media have to do with ministry? And it's like, that's the challenge. Is like you should be connected. If you don't understand it, I mean, I have a pretty good understanding of it. I think it's, you know, it's a natural extension of you know, public relations, which is a natural extension of branding, and not branding in the sense of we have a good font and we have a good color palette and we have a good logo. I mean, a brand is all about an emotional response. When we say Lego, when we say Disney, Pixar, Apple, Starbucks. You know, that emotional response is what the brand is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a huge bummer right now. We're at a point where, I mean, churches don't fully understand. I mean, a lot of times we talk to them, and if you talk them through it, they know that, well, our competition isn't the local church. But really, they think they're competing with the local church. And that's why so many churches are growing based on re-church people.
Mm-hmm.
When our competition is... I mean, it's World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
It's PlayStation. It's
everything else in culture.
It is. It's culture that we're fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, we're stuck in this sandbox thinking that we're fighting this race and as nicely as we can, but we're losing a generation because we don't know how to relate the Bible in a practical way to where people are at now. And the bummer is the Bible doesn't need defense. It just needs to be, like, let out. People need to be living it in practical ways.
Mm-hmm.
People need to be living it by going and meeting the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
And we get hung up on these philosophies on, like, you know, actually, I think the whole thing of Chick-fil-A and the homosexuality thing, I mean, I think how that ended up in how there was that article about that guy coming out that he was Dan Cathy's friend. Did you read that?
Yes. That Dan Cathy took the time to befriend someone who was a leader of the gay movement.
And it's like, you know what? That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. It's not about, I mean, we have little short sayings about, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin. What does that really mean? That means mm-hmm. you invite them out to dinner. It means mm-hmm. you get to know them. It means if they need help, you help them. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're so hung up on the rules of things. And it's like understanding what does it mean to live with grace. And we're only going to be able to ever experience grace as much as we can give grace. Mm-hmm. And anyways.
What else are you learning from the marketplace that you see the church could really engage as a better opportunity to do more good things?
Yeah, there's one church that definitely stands out more than a lot of the other ones. Granger Church mm-hmm. in South Bend, Indiana, yep. with Tim Stevens, Ken Myers, Mark yes. Beeson's the senior pastor.
Yes.
And we were blessed to be able to start the journey with them a couple of years ago, about maybe 2-3 years ago. And they fully embraced the idea of their identity and how they use their campus mm-hmm. and reinventing their campus to this. They actually rechanged the name of their church campus to Granger Commons. Mm-hmm. And it's literally taken years for them to lower down the walls to where people feel comfortable just coming on there for like a Financial Peace University class or a marriage counseling thing that they can come into their cafe and without any sort of like pretentious kind of, you know, hitting people over the heads, they can have business meetings there. They can meet there. But they have like, you know, a restaurant cafe there now. They have an early, you know, learning center, early, you know, childhood preschool type thing. They have the church still meets there. Mm-hmm. But they're actually cultivating as if it's a community center.
Bingo.
Just like the church used to be uh-huh. before modernism, before uh-huh. master plan and zoning. Because that's really the thing that's physically killed the church is the whole thing of zoning and modernism. It's that whole Lego set.
Mm.
Creating the different zones and follow the instructions. You know, because of separation of church and state, there is no church zone. So they're building these cities and these master plans, and you know, you have to get in your car to drive to a church, which is, you know, surrounded by a moat of parking.
Yes.
And it's the isolated. Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Yes. It is. Yeah. We deal with churches that are like, you know, backing up to the community, mooning the community sometimes, showing them their backside. The front door is like, it's not welcoming at all. Mm-hmm. And then even when people walk in, it's not welcoming. So Granger's done an amazing job at reinventing their facade mm-hmm. and physically lowering a drawbridge through what mm-hmm. Visioneering calls architectural evangelism. Mm-hmm. You know, Visioneerings are kind of my brother's company that kind of spun out of Plain Joe. Uh-huh. He had a chance to kind of lead that up under the wing of a national nonprofit provision uh-huh. ministry group. So they're the only, you know, national church architectural firm that's wholly owned by a nonprofit ministry. Mm. So what they do with all their proceeds mm-hmm. is they actually put it back into church planning and stuff like that. It's more kingdom related.
Yes.
But, you know, they're not driven to increase the cost of a project. They're driven to actually maximize the investment into a project. But, you know, I think, you know, Granger really embraced it. And I think when I look at the team that Ken Myers leads on the creative side that we usually really deal with, a lot of them are marketplace people.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand the practical side. They have a huge heart for the unchurched. And how do you actually connect those things?
Mm-hmm.
So everything from their physical environment to even their website, I mean, you know, they were willing to take a risk on their website. We went with an all-card style website.
Where it looks like Pinterest.
Yeah, it looks like Pinterest. Yeah, and that's the thing is they were very conscientious that they wanted to make all the content as shareable as possible and as easily accessible. So the whole thing revolves around a custom search engine that we built for them so that it's not the default listing by, you know, most popular page, the oldest page, you know, or the alphabetical listing. You know, they can actually wait and prioritize the search mm-hmm. results.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone comes there and they say, I need help with my marriage, mm-hmm. you know, they type in marriage, the results are actually prioritized and mm-hmm. given to them based on what Granger feels is right.
You control the relevance.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be more effective in ministry.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. And then the next step there is the same integration with media social. Well, then mm-hmm. we're all, you know, able to see not only what those popular searches are, mm-hmm. but who's searching.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone is searching for, like, I need help mm-hmm. with my marriage, are they someone that we can actually reach back out to and say, like, hey, is there anything we can pray for you? Will they open up the door?
Uh-huh.
You know, or we can be more direct and say, hey, you know, we noticed you searched for marriage. You know, here's some classes. Is there a counselor for that? But actually being intentional about those things.
Yeah. And you've got the data to do it.
Yeah, yeah, in a fun way enough, yeah. We've been blessed to be able to partner with, and that's the thing, with literally dozens and dozens of churches who are being intentional about how they're moving forward in the future. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and it's a, you know, a blessed journey for us. But, yeah, definitely one of my favorite people's Ken Meyer, but, you know, she's lots of fun to work with.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Such a joy to be with you and to have a conversation with you.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you.
Thank you to Peter McGowan for joining us here on the Social Media Church podcast. I am just blown away from that conversation. And you only heard a part of it. I mean, we talked for a couple of hours. This young man has some profound wisdom, tremendous conviction, a heart for excellence, really keen on stewardship, and yet he's self-professed, not real comfortable talking about in front of people. And so it took some persuasion for him to sit down with me and allow me to record this to share with you, because I just felt what he had to say was so passionate, with such conviction and yet humility, and the church really needs to hear this idea. So I want to do my part of spreading that idea, because I think it can propel us into a whole nother way of doing church, being church, and engaging our culture and actually renewing the church so that we lead in culture. So let this simmer on your back burner, in the back of your brain, even hit rewind and listen to this again and take some notes. This is not didactic kind of podcasting here. We're not going to line things up in 10 easy steps to do such and such, but we really want you to listen to the heartbeat through the conversation, catch the story, and allow that to re-inspire you to connect with God and better connect with the people to whom that you are called as a church. And you can connect with us on social media at socialmediachurch.net, and we've got buttons to Twitter and Facebook and even Google+. And you can even text in or call in your comments or questions or stories at Social Media Church's voicemail line, and the number is 9493-543216. The number again, 9493-543216. Would love to hear from you, and with your permission, incorporate your voice onto a future episode. And of course, at the socialmediachurch.net, there will be show notes with links to all the goodies that were mentioned, including Plain Joe Studios, Media Social, churchonline.com, which is the online campus of Community Bible Church of San Antonio, Granger Community Church, and I was able to find an article about Lego, since I was so fascinated with how they've had this resurrection and renaissance in their business and how it's become such a big part of culture. And here's some numbers. Listen to this. In 2004, the company was close to $1 billion in debt. That's B with a billion, or that's billion with a B. And it was suffering a 40% decline in sales in the span of only 2 years. But they renewed their strategy and they made Lego a premium brand. And now it is reportedly the most valuable toy company in the world, estimated to be worth more than $14.6 billion. That's a pretty amazing story of what happened to Legos in a span of a decade. Imagine what could happen in your church context in the span of a decade when you catch a fresh vision and rethink and reimagine how everything is done and get back to the core of what the church should be about and maximizing its resources and unleashing the creativity that God has put in all of us. Again, a word of thanks to Leadership Network for this new partnership to extend the platform and allow the ideas that emanate out of the conversations of the Social Media Church podcast to percolate and to spread, to be a blessing and to inspire churches everywhere, not only in the United States, but around the world. Look forward to hearing from you. Spread the word about what the conversations are here. Join us through social media. And my name is DJ Chuang. Until next time, we'll stay connected online.